Yes. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Sorry, I should have drank more water this morning. Welcome back to the break room. I know it's been a while, y'all. I'm sorry. It's been a long summer. A long summer. It's me. It's Mike. Oh, you can hear my voice. I'm cracking. My voice is cracking like it's like I'm 12 years old again. Like it's 97. Man, speaking of 97, I was watching a documentary a few weeks ago about Vince McMahon on Netflix called Mr. McMahon. I think it's called Mr. McMahon. And watching that documentary took me back to my childhood, to my youth. Pretty much the documentary, for people who didn't see it yet, it details Mr. McMahon's journey from, well, Mr. McMahon, fuck him. Vince McMahon's journey from his father having the WWF to him taking over control in the 80s, him taking over other territories in the 80s, even though it was taboo to do so. And then him, you know, enacting WrestleMania. WrestleMania 3 took him over the top with Hogan. No rest in peace, Hogan. By the way, no rest in peace to Hogan. Hulk Hogan or Terry, whatever his last name is. Whatever his last name is. I don't even care. He's not getting no roses here. But yeah, it just pretty much detailed his journey in wrestling through the 80s and 90s and 2000s. By the way, I grew up a wrestling fan. I was born in the mid-80s. I'll be 40 this fall, actually. So I grew up in the mid-80s and the 90s. With wrestling, and I forgot, first of all, how much I checked out of wrestling after like 2000, maybe 01. As soon as SmackDown launched, you know, on UPN, I was done. I was like, all right, I'm done. But you know, the Attitude Era was my joint, was my ish. Even before the Attitude Era, like the early 90s, Bret Hart era, the Hogan era, Randy Savage era, the late 80s, early 90s into like late 90s. That was me. Oh, when I say 97, I just think about, wow, that time. And I'm thinking about that documentary I watched and how it brought me back to my childhood, my adolescence, how much I followed wrestling as a soap opera, a novella, if you will, and how much it kind of carried me, my youth, as far as entertainment. I remember growing up, I was privileged enough to be allowed to go outside. I know a lot of people today, a lot of kids today, they don't go outside like, you know, like I did. When my mom said you can go outside, it would mean go outside and play and you know, just make sure you check in, but go outside and play. And bro, like I lived in a building growing up. I grew up in a building all my life, no house. So growing up in my building, all the neighborhood kids in my building and down the street, other buildings, shout out to Gessner. You know, we would all link up, play, tag, manhunt, hide and go seek. All that stuff, you know, actual sports like ball. And we would always take a break and just chop it up about wrestling. Whether it was the early 90s, we're talking about, like I said, Hogan and Randy Savage. And then even the late 90s when ECW was popping off, we'd be like, yo, did you see last night? Did you stay up? Did you stay up for ECW? What was that? And so I forgot how much excitement wrestling as a youth gave me. And I appreciate the entertainment aspect of my youth with wrestling. Even though you always knew at that time, not knew, but you kind of always suspected, like from the Attitude Era and little as you got older, that Vince McMahon was a dirtbag. And even as you got older, now as an adult, you would read stories and stuff, whether it was stories with wrestlers, whether it was stories with just himself, or now lately with him with women, with sexual assault and rape allegations and whatnot, how much of a dirtbag he really is, you know? And he's a dirtbag. And of course, he's still alive and well because they said the good die young, which means the old, but the bad stay old. You know what I mean? Or the bad stay alive. But that documentary was well done. I think Bill Simmons did it. It was well done. And I think what I got from it is like it kind of put into texture, into nuance, not nuance, but texture, how much Vince McMahon is a fallible person, how much of a flawed character he is, even though he's successful. It also makes you wonder, what is success? I think success also depends on what your mission statement is, what your goal is. And he makes no qualms in the documentary, Vince McMahon, about who he is, what his goals are, how ruthless and shrewd he is, and how he's not bothered by imagery or his image, really. So I said to say this, I think there's value, I would say, for lack of better words, in knowing who you are, whether you know you're an asshole or not. And just going with it, you know what I'm saying? And at least he knew who he was or is. He's still alive, of course. But I definitely took away from that documentary saying, wow, like, I wonder if there was any other way for the WWF or E now and wrestling as a whole to grow, if not through Vince and his characteristics, his nasty, shrewd ways, you know? Was there any other way for wrestling to grow, or did it have to be this pathway, the pathway of Vince, the pathway of nasty tactics, of uber alpha male, I hate that term, but uber alpha male tactics? I don't know, but I lean to the idea that it had to be Vince. It had to be him. But anyway, that was a documentary I watched recently, and I also want to say that guys like Vince, I always wonder, what does winning mean? You know, if you win at all costs, but you burn down your legacy or your name, or you tarnish your name or your household, is it worth it? If you have a lot of bodies and blood on your hands, but you still won, is it worth it? I don't know. Everybody's goals are different. Like I said, everybody's goals as far as success is different. But regardless, so I know people have been asking me, yo, when are you going to drop a podcast again or an episode again? And I've had a busy / weird summer. Shoot, this August has been a cold summer. This August has been a cold month. You know, where's the heat wave? You know, the only heat wave we had was in June. But lately it's been 70 degrees. So I don't know what kind of summer this is. And supposedly the forecast says in the fall, it'll be really cold early. Not looking forward to that. But this summer was an interesting one. I took a break from graduate school. One, because I need the break. I need the mental break. You know, graduate school has been kicking my ass for the last few years. Not just labor-wise, but also labor-wise, but also financially. You know, it sucks to just be paying out of pocket, or even with financial aid help, you still got to come up with some shit on the end. And now that we have Trump, Daddy Trump, so terrible. Now that we have Trump, you know, peeling back on the DOE, Department of Education, and forcing people to pay out of pocket more with their tuition and getting tighter restraints with financial aid, it's just like, yo, it's really hard to continue school. Thankfully, I'm in my last legs of school. I got 2 more classes. So I'm going to do it this fall and then 1 more in January, and then I'm done with graduate school. God willing. But this summer, I took a break from taking a course, and which I kind of have regrets about taking a break now from the summer, because if I took this class, it's the summertime, and then this class coming up in the fall, I'd be done by December with school, period. But really, this summer also was a financial situation where I need to take a break financially, because I need to recoup some money for, and I couldn't just pay for this $1,700 class. It's just like, yeah. Shout out to everybody that was born rich. Shout out to you. I don't have to worry about this. If you were born rich, shout out to you for not having to worry about tuition. Because us normal folk, us middle class, lower class, working class, I would say, people, we got to worry about tuition, among other things. But what I would say is I definitely took a break from class, but I also just was busy, man. So I was working summer school, you know, teaching. You know, I had, you know, summer is big for 2 of my daughters. It's their birthdays in August, so you have to worry about that. Then my youngest, she's on the spectrum. She needed the attention in the summer. A lot was going on with her, a lot of moving parts with her. Just overall fatigue, too. Like, I need to get my bearings back. So I have. I would say I have. But, you know, summer was also cool in a way because, you know, a lot of music came out this summer. You know, the most notarized album was probably the Clips album, or I should say Clips, their album, Let God Sort Them Out. I enjoyed it. I go back to a couple records at least once or twice a week. They had a great rollout, and I enjoyed their album the most. I'm anticipating tonight at midnight, Joey Badass drops. I'm very much so in anticipation for his album because he had a fiery spring with the battles with Ray Vaughn and Daylight and the whole West Coast, basically. And he came out looking great on that musically. And he came out rejuvenated, it seemed like, and spirited. So I want to see what he comes with tonight on this album. I'm excited about that. And just overall, I've been enjoying myself. Shout out to Odile. Odile. Odile is a great R&B artist from London. And he dropped an EP this past summer. I forgot the name of it. It'll come to me. I'm gonna look it up too. But he's somebody that on the R&B side have been I have been champion. Oh, it's called The Summer That Saved Me by Odeal. I enjoyed his work too on the R&B side. Shout out to him too. He definitely held me down this summer. I'm still listening to that, to his stuff. And I've also, speaking of music, I've also been to replace going to school. I've actually been making music this summer, mostly beats, mostly production, mostly tracks, mostly beats. I've been producing a lot this summer, making beats, just trying to, you know, music has been my number one love since I was a kid. You know, anybody who knows me knows that. And anybody who truly knows me knows how much music dominates my spirit and also my sanity. What I mean by that is some people listen to music and they love music. They love to listen to music. It's their love. It's their passion. Maybe it's their hobby. It guides them and they love it. I would go a step further. I would say music imprisons me. Damn, it's so white. The background, I feel like I'm talking from heaven. It's morning time. So it's like, you know, that's the sun is out. And even with the shade on, that it's still bright. So forgive me. But yeah, I look heavenly. Music imprisons me, you know, has gravity by the neck. Pause. And it's always had a hold on me where it's inescapable. I can't escape music. You know, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you know, me and my friends would listen to music, or I'd be in the car with my cousins and music's playing. You know, my family members or my peers, they could recite lyrics young like me. They could, you know, sing along like me. They could catch a groove like me earlier. But I was that kid who also was like listening at a very young age for other reasons. Like I could hear the BPMs. I could hear the bass lines, you know, underneath. I could hear how a certain engineer did a mix. I could hear, oh, he mixed that or she mixed that. I would be studying liner notes to learn who were the engineers, who were the programmers, who were the musicians, who Chucky Thompson was, who was Duro, who was you know, Bob Power, who was just so many different people who were creating this product for me that weren't getting notarized on MTV or BET, but they were also instrumental in making sure I was given a good product. And I had to know who they were. I had to discover who they were, and I had to know how they were doing what they were doing. Also, it doesn't hurt that my dad and my grandfather are musicians, lifelong musicians. So I grew up with instrumentation in the household. You know, I have memories of my dad with his Triton keyboard playing, you know, all day, all night. I sometimes mix around with the keyboard too, whether he knew it or not. Sorry, Dad. Sorry, Pop. But I have memories of just my dad, like, you know, making music in studio, you know, making albums on our porch. He'd play with our neighbor who played like bass and saxophone. So they would have jams, you know, on a hot summer day, back-to-back porches. You know, he'd play on his porch, the neighbor. My dad played on our porch. And, you know, it's just like a soundtrack of my life. And that's why I like that movie Crooklyn so much by Spike Lee, because Crooklyn is a semi-autobiographical movie about Spike growing up in the 70s with a musician for a father and a teacher for a mother, and his father being a struggling musician, but music is a soundtrack to his life and how it dominates the household. That's me all day long. You know, I grew up with that. So maybe I was indoctrinated into it by my parents or by my mom and dad, my dad, or who knows. I like to say that even if my dad wasn't a musician, or my grandfather, who I was named after, a renowned musician in Haiti, I still think that I would be this psychotic over music. I still think so, because like I said, I just listen to music differently. And now this summer, I after years, decades even, I'm still in love with music, and I'm now back into music, producing and stuff like that. It's been at least 15, 20 years since I took it seriously. When I was a kid in my early 20s, I was doing it, but now I'm back. But yeah, I definitely have a renewed love for it, I would say. So I've been playing with samples, with drums, with everything. And I and other instruments too, bass and all that stuff. I want to say that for me, I had a realization. Like the other day, maybe a few weeks ago, I went to a function, and shout out to Glenda in Kenya, and someone took a candid photo of me. I didn't realize that, which I don't mind. I know some people don't like that, but I didn't mind a candid photo. And I realized how much weight I gained. You know, I've gained a lot of weight. since the pandemic. Mind you, it's been 5 years, but still. And, you know, growing up as a big person, I've always been conscious of my weight. And there's been moments where I worked at it, made strides even. And there's been moments where I got lazy and really fucked up with my weight. Or pardon my French, messed up with my weight. And I've been on a more or less streak of like messing up my weight, being undisciplined, being very much so undisciplined, not, or taking like one step forward and three steps back, you know? In fact, I remember last fall around this time, like around September, I started to take my nutrition seriously. And I was like eating like three boiled eggs a day, every morning. Then I would like eat small portions. And it was like, it wasn't even super focused. It was almost natural. I was just doing it on the low, humbly. And I was starting to lose weight. I was losing weight. The weight was coming off rather fast. And it was to the point where I got nervous. I lost so much weight by November that I was scared that there was a health scare. So I did something I regret. I had lost so much weight. So I looked at the scale and I said, no, I'm down to this much pounds. And it was to the point where like even colleagues were telling me, like, yo, Mike, you're losing weight. Yo, Mike, you're losing weight. In fact, one colleague was like, yo, is this natural? Is this my like choice? Like, are you okay? And I was like, shit. Just her saying that, I was like, oh, yo, you know, like she put that bug in my ear. And I wish she didn't do that, but she meant well and she wasn't being malicious. So I remember that weekend. So you know what? Let me test myself. Let me make sure that it's natural weight loss. It's good weight loss. Let me pig out this weekend and eat wild, stupid food, nasty food, junk food. If I still have weight loss by Monday, Tuesday, then I got to see a doctor. I pigged out that weekend. And by Monday, Tuesday, I went on the scale and I gained some weight. I said, oh, okay, so I'm good. Like, my body is okay, or I think is okay. By the way, always go to the doctor. Get your physicals done every year and blood work done every year. I gained the weight, but then ever since then, that's like, it's been hard to friggin' shred. So I really regret doing that. I should have just trusted my gut, literally. And I should have just like stayed on the path of doing what I was doing. Because whatever I was doing last fall, it was working. And I wanted to recreate that, and slowly I've been trying to do that again. So slowly I have been eating like boiled eggs again, and I've been like, you know, trying to put more chia seeds in my eggs, more tomatoes, more spinach. But I do got to step it up a notch. I do, because there've been moments this summer where I would like falter and eat some whack shit, you know, eat some fried stuff, or you know, just overindulge, eat like greasy food, like pizza, stuff like that. I have had relapses, and let me tell you, food is an addiction, and you can get relapses from food, from diets, you know, from healthy diets. You can relapse, and I've had relapse. I have had relapse, absolutely. So I think I should have to say this. I want to dedicate this fall to going back to a good path like last fall. In fact, you know, of course, January 1st is the start of a calendar new year, of course. But I always treat September as a new year to me, a new year or new beginnings, because, you know, growing up in school all my life and now I'm like professionally, September is a pivotal part of the school, of the year. You know, it's like new beginnings, especially now that I'm a parent too, you know? So I'm going to treat this September as a means to like really like start anew, start fresh. And I'm going to really try to dedicate myself to it. I really am. And I want to do better. I really do. It's in my spirit that I want to do better. But let's see. And if you see me out there, motivate me or egg me on and hold me accountable. I would appreciate that. With that being said, and also for the fact that I'm turning 40 this fall, you know, I'm turning 40. And that means a lot to me. You know, a lot of brothers don't make it to 40. A lot of brothers don't make it to 50. You know, so many men, black men in particular, just die young. Whether it's nutrition, whether it's violence, whether it's mental health. You know, a lot of brothers don't make it to be in their twilight years. And I want to make it to my twilight years, especially for my youngest daughter who's special needs, who's going to need me to be alive for a long time. I want to be there for her, you know? So let's see. I'm trying. Please, like I said, if you see me slipping, hold me accountable with my weight, with my nutrition. Because I need to do better, for sure. So that's my summer, pretty much. Some good music I've heard. I had to reassess myself weight-wise. and just had to reprogram myself as far as you know, recalibrate myself with school and just take a break. And also, like I said, I found I found a new sense of love with music and on the production side. Very expensive though, I must say, whether it comes to equipment, whether it comes to sounds and whatnot and accruing sounds. It's taxing fiscally and otherwise. But I'm gonna try my best to stay on top of my passion and also my purpose. My passion being music and my children, and my purpose being to stay alive and healthy for my kids. You know, bear with me, but stay with me on that. I want to talk to you guys real quick because I'm not gonna stay long. Maybe another 30 minutes and then I'm out. But I want to talk to y'all about an encounter I had recently with a friend of mine. I won't reveal who this person is to protect them. But I want to speak on something that they went through and what's revealing about it. He was telling me a story. He was telling me a story the other day about how the story is this, or the moral of the story is, don't let people take your kindness or weakness. Do not let people take your kindness or weakness. And what I mean by that is, in this story, a friend of mine was trying to help out a peer of his with some money issue. And of course, I preface this by saying, guys, be careful when it comes to money, because people are weird about money. People will kill over money. People will fight over money. People will burn others over money. And in this story, my boy, let's call him Bert. So Bert tried to help out a friend of his. How? Bert's homie has money issues. Why? Because Bert's homie is, for lack of better words, a deadbeat dad. Got multiple kids. He's on child support. And since he's on child support, whenever he files for his taxes, he gets no money back because the IRS initially garnishes it to the respective children or the mothers of the respective children. So my homie, Bert, is not a citizen. He's DACA. He's a DACA resident. You know, shout out to Obama for that. You know, children who came from another country, but, you know, they grew up here and maybe their parents are citizens, but they're not yet. So they're DACA. And his legal status there's a reason why I brought up his legal status. Bert is trying to help his homie with income tax. How? Bert's homie wants to use Bert as a dependent. Allegedly, by the way. By the way, this is not me, guys. I'm a citizen, born and raised here in America. So IRS, quit it. Relax. This is all alleged. But he wanted to use homie as a dependent. He's being asked to be a dependent on his homie's tax return as an independent so he can get some cash flow. Long story short, Bert obliges. Weeks go by. There's no sign of the tax, money yet. And Bert is really a con doing it. He's a third party, someone else who's trying to facilitate it. So there's Bert, there's a dirtbag, and then there's somebody else who works in finance, who does taxes, who's trying to help facilitate it. Bert is a middleman just trying to help out, you know, introduce one person to another person, and he'd be the codependent. With that being said, money is not seen for a while and the facilitator can be reached. And Bert himself, he is always like in the wind. With that being said, you know, the dude, the dirtbag, he starts pressing Bert. He's like, yo, by the way, this is all alleged, allegedly. Bert is being pressed by this dude. Where's my money? Yeah, where's your homeboy supposed to hook me up with the money? Where is he? I don't like this. I feel like y'all trying to play me. I'm going to kill y'all. I'm going to come after y'all, yada, yada, yada. And Bert is trying to fix things. Like, yo, what's going on? So he tries to make amends with them. He tries to tell them, yo, it's just taking some time. It's going to happen. It's going to come through. Don't worry about it. And the dude goes very, like, Karen status, where he's like, you know what? Fuck this. And he goes to, like, immigration and goes to the cops, files a police report saying, this dude's stealing from me. He's taking from me. He's not even a citizen here. He should be deported. It's like, yo. And he tries to get my man deported. The way this person found out, Bert, he was trying to go somewhere and there was a checkpoint. And he got pulled over. And he got pulled over. He's like, yo, the cops told him, hey, just so you know, there's a warrant out for your arrest. He's like, what? Like, yeah, we got to tow your car and arrest you. He's like, warrant for what? I don't get in trouble. He's like, yeah, well, someone made a complaint about you, yada, yada, yada. You stole from them or whatever. And he found out that this guy actually went to the authorities over him. His own mans went to the authorities over him because he was mad that the money didn't come in yet. Mind you, long story short, the money did clear, but because you didn't pay child support, you know, IRS took your money ASAP and dispersed it where it belongs. So the money did clear. It's just that you don't deserve it, or you don't, you know, it's owed elsewhere. So that's what happened. Sorry about that. So I said to say this. I said to say that I think what I learned from, you know, as I'm hearing the story, as I allegedly listened to Bert. I said to myself, like, Bert, you got to understand something. One, people are funny about money. So if you're dealing with weird characters who are trying to either game the system or get around the system or finagle or whatever, and they're not at the same time holding up their end of the bargain with just their natural duties, like paying for your kids, for instance, just know that they're weirdos you cannot trust. And on top of that, it's a very dangerous thing because you're trying to be a good person and trying to help out a person in a situation, but you know, that snake might bite you. And not just a snake that might bite you, but the whole situation might come crashing on you from various angles. So you have to understand something, like you cannot do for others when they don't do for themselves. You know what I'm saying? You can't save people. You know, you can't save people, especially when people are choosing to drown. If people are choosing to drown in life, you cannot throw them a raft. They'll fuck around and pop that raft. You know what I'm saying? With a knife. And they'll try to drag you too to drown. You cannot, you know, you can only help out people who want to help themselves, you know, and you can't feel sorry for people, especially adults who have kids, who chose to have kids, who chose to live a certain lifestyle, who chose to be out there. You know what I'm saying? You can't. You have to allow people to sink where they deserve to sink. Otherwise, you'll sink with them. So I felt bad for Bert, for his story, but I also felt like, it's a lesson learned, and hopefully you did learn. You know, hopefully you did learn, Bert, that, you know, help yourself, man. Help yourself. And supposedly now the situation's calmed down, allegedly, and, you know, things are understood where they stay. But, you know, for the future, I allegedly told Bert, yo, man, you need to watch your back, do for yourself, and mind your business. There's so much power in minding your business. When you mind your business, that means you have autonomy of yourself and only of yourself, and no one else can get into your business and ruffle feathers because they're not allowing your business, because your business is your own, because you haven't included anybody into your business. When you mind your business, there's less room for disruption. There's less room for chaos. Less room for drama. But when you don't mind your business, when you include people into your life who don't deserve to be in your life, when you include people who are nefarious, weirdos with other agendas, they might affect or infect your peace, your world, and your sanity, and your safety. I'm a big proponent that no one is above my safety. No one. And no one is above my kids' safety. Now, Bert's not a parent, allegedly, but still, you need to, I allegedly told Bert, you need to prioritize yourself. First, second, third, and fourth person in your life. It should be you. You should wake up every day and say, how do I get mines? How do I protect mines? How do I build mine? Don't worry about others. Others, at the end of the day, won't save you. They won't help you. You know, they won't. I remember like when I was like 18 years old, I was really 17, you know, summer 2020, summer 03. I graduated high school, June 03. So that summer, I had a plug who had Nextels wholesale. Chirp, chirp, chirp. You know, he had Nextels wholesale. And he was like, yo, why don't you buy in with me and we could sell them back at a profit, you know? I want to say a friend, more of an acquaintance/neighbor. Which is the first red flag, you know. Why come to me with this and not one of your actual true homeboys? But I digress. I was young, 17 years old, fresh out of high school. And, you know, I put $200 in and I invested in some phones just to sell at a higher rate. you know, at a profit. But before I can get the actual products to sell, the dude was MIA. He was ghost. Like he took my money and then he was gone for a while, like for weeks. And mind you, we're young kids. You can't be too far. And at first, you trust somebody like, oh, no, they're busy right now, but they're gonna come back and with the profit. You know what I mean? They asked me to invest with them for a reason on this little hustle. I trust that they'll come back with the money, with the profit. And, you know, by midsummer, I'm like, yo, what's going on? And I'd track dude down at his mom's crib. I had to really, like, you know, press him at his door in front of his mom's and really had to damn near embarrass him to get my money back. And thankfully, it ended peacefully where I got my money back. And because there was no profit. I don't know what happened. I don't remember what happened with the phones so long ago. But I remember feeling like I got to get my money back. And I had to almost take no prisoners and feel no shame about pressing him at his mom's crib in front of his mom, which I take no pride in. I take no pride in that, you know? But I said to say this, sometimes you need to advocate for yourself. And sometimes before you advocate for yourself, you need to know what situation to put yourself in or not. You know, that's the true value in knowing what to avoid and knowing what to get into. And what I would tell Bert is, don't get into anything that will not benefit you. You know what I'm saying? Don't get into anything that won't safeguard you, you know, especially now as we get older, because the slightest mistake can cost you your freedom, can cost you your legal status here. It can cost you sometimes your life, you know, and it's not worth it. You know, taking pity on someone or a little quick cash scheme, it's not worth it. And I'm not even saying Bert was in it to make money, because he was going to make money. Bert was only trying to help his friend to make money, his homie to make money, not even him. He was only trying to help his friend out because he felt bad for his friend that he's not getting income tax money, whatever. It's not worth it. Do not let people take your kindness for weakness. Because most human beings, they don't respect generosity. They don't respect kind nature. They only respect ruthlessness. They only respect money. They only respect their end game, their bottom line. Most people are not compassionate. Most people are not able to have empathy or understanding or grace. Most people are assholes. I'm sorry. Pardon my French. But most people are assholes. Not just assholes. Forget that. Most people are self-serving. They're out for theirs. You know what I'm saying? And it's a messed up world, but sometimes you gotta say, you know what? Tunnel vision and be out for yourself as well. And I try to take that approach. I mean, day to day, like, you know, I help people, you know, like open the door for ladies and make sure little kids can cross the street, et cetera. And also, you know, try to like help neighborhood kids with like advice and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I'm not risking my freedom, my life, my money, my children over anybody. No, because you only have one life to live. And once your life is gone, that's it. There is no spawning. There is no Mario Kart or Mario World, second life, third life, fourth life. No, you get one life to live. And there's been plenty of sad stories of people in the grave or people in prison saying, man, I just made a mistake. Man, 5 minutes cost me my freedom. Or, you know, damn, he did one little favor and now he's resting in peace. That ain't me. To get me off this earth or to get me in prison, you have to make sure that I was a wild and out individual, that I deserve to be there. Because I live my life day to day on the straight and narrow, or I try to be on the straight and narrow, because, like I said, you only have one life to live, especially when you're a parent. You know, that's my summer. That's my story, too. Allegedly, and it ain't my story. Shout out to Bert. It's alleged Bert. It ain't my story, so you can't get me. Otherwise, like I said, if y'all see me, hold me accountable with my weight, hold me accountable with my nutrition, with my fitness. And I want to do better. I want to do better. So I'm going to try to do better, but I know it's just a daily taxing mental grind. The psychology of trying to better yourself, it's really something to behold. It's something to study. Yeah. I have a fight against the psychology of it all. You know what I'm saying? You know, shout out to that movie Shallow Hal. I wish I had that same psychosis of someone just, you know, hypnotizing me to like just do better, because I feel like I need that. I need someone to like force me to do better. That's why I always say, you know, when people are out there like wealthy, out there, like, you know, I think when I admire, well, not admire, what I look at the most as the most powerful form of wealth is having your own cook. Of course, I'm no baby. I can cook for myself, I can make choices better nutritionally. But for people who are like uber rich or famous, I mean, not famous, wealthy, and they have cooks and chefs at home who can just like feed them the most healthy foods and make sure that they're eating right and they don't have to think about it or worry about it. I envy that, because that's the most luxurious thing. Not a watch, not a Richard Mille or Patek watch, not no chain, not no car, not no mansion. To me, one of the biggest signs of wealth is having like access to like good nutrition, you know? And that's one thing I aspire to have, the access to great nutrition on standby right there for me. But no one feels sorry for you. No one will make excuses for you, and no one should be living in fantasy land. I'm in the here and now. I'm alive still, and I need to do better no matter what I have. You know what I'm saying? So this is me taking a stand saying, you know what? This is a declaration. It's about to be September. It's Labor Day coming. This is an opportunity for me to like really dedicate myself to a new beginning. So bear with me as I do that. But in the meantime, till next time, it's your boy. It's The Break Room. And holla if you hear me. You heard? Later.